I am fascinated, intrigued, and honored by
you. May have done what they said you did, but
they are magnificent. They
marvelous.
Say you are.
You need to know that you're okay just the way you are. Succeeded in you as a child.
What you've been through matters.
This podcast is designed for you.
It's
love on a mission
hope.
In a world
about
where
the human
focus
experience.
Is greatly lacking.
My name is Ginger Wilk, and we're here to talk about that which matters.
Welcome to That Which Matters. I'm really hoping that you're enjoying and learning and growing as a result of these episodes that have been going out through this podcast. And these topics, if applied on a regular basis, can really help people to navigate through their relationships, their challenges on a day-to-day basis, some of their self-doubts or self-hatred, some of the obstacles that one would come across. If you apply these principles, I know that there will be growth. And today is another one of those topics. I want to talk about triggers today. We all have them. So no matter who we are, no matter what race, no matter how much money we have or don't have, no matter how much education we have or don't have, we all have triggers. And what are they? What are triggers? Well, triggers are definitely a reaction that we have to a specific event that we come across, a word that's spoken to us, something that we see maybe on a movie or in front of us in live time, an event that occurs, a response from another person. It could come in any way through the five senses, and we can be triggered into having the same reaction that we had when we originally experienced that event. For instance, if there was a situation where a person called you a name, maybe they were only kidding. Maybe they said, you know, you're such a clown. And they meant it in a funny way. They meant it in a comical way. They didn't mean it to insult you. But maybe when you were in third grade, you had a bunch of kids that called you a clown, and it was to be mean. It was to be rejecting. It was to make you feel like there was something wrong with you. Therefore, that word, years later, now that you're all grown up, even though the motivation behind that word being spoken was pure, that word will trigger off your reaction. And so you're going to react like you would have in the third grade. You're going to feel the way that you felt in the third grade, not in the present time. And whenever we experience a situation where our reaction is stronger than what it should be, whenever we find ourselves having this over-the-top response to something where we just are super angry or really sad or super irritated in something that didn't warrant that type of a reaction, we know that we've been triggered. And so it's important for us to understand our triggers. We can't stop people from saying things. We can't stop the world from presenting us with scenarios that will cause a triggering effect. But we can allow ourselves to be more self-aware and to understand specifically what triggers us in situations to having a stressful reaction, an angry reaction, or even for our bodies to just react, even if we don't respond verbally or even if nobody even notices what our reaction is, we feel it on the inside. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about what some of those triggers can be. And there are a ton of them. And I think it's important that we just identify what they are for ourselves. There's going to be a list that I'm going to give you today, go over some things, but you're going to come up with the specific triggers for yourself and allow yourself the time to discover what they are so that you can pinpoint it, you can understand it, and you can even do some preventative work. And it's kind of like a PTSD reaction. Not to minimize the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a very real diagnosis. And this is not to slap that diagnosis on you or any of the listeners here. But a PTSD reaction would be that type of a thing where a balloon popping sounds like a bomb when you're at war or so forth and so on. Where, like the example I gave with the clown, a word that's spoken reminds you of a time where you were very much ridiculed. And so you react in an over-the-top type of manner. And so I remember, just to give you an example myself, when I was a new mom, my oldest daughter was in kindergarten, and I was, of course, very nervous about, you know, her first day in kindergarten and, you know, really missing her and not wanting her, even though she had been in preschool, not wanting her to go and have a full day with the other children and in a place where I couldn't, you know, supervise her every moment, and just the normal mom/parent type worries. And she went to school and she came home. I picked her up and she seemed fine. And the minute she stepped into the door, she began to just cry and cry and cry. And I said, "Oh my God, what's wrong? What happened?" And she said that this one particular girl who she knew from other classes she had taken when she was, you know, in preschool, just extracurricular activities, she knew this girl. So she kind of gravitated towards this girl on the playground. And the girl said to her, "Only girls with blonde hair can play with us today." And my daughter had brown hair. And so she was just absolutely blown away by that. She felt an extreme sense of rejection. She did not expect that particular girl to, you know, speak to her in that manner. And I myself just began to cry. I, you know, rounded the corner and got away from her so that she didn't see how I cried and cried and cried, because my pain for her was just terrible. And I ended up speaking to the parents about it a little bit, and they were very apologetic and they spoke to her. And again, there can be a lot worse things that can happen. But for me to hear that brought me back to the fact of, you know, how I've shared having been bullied when I was a young child. It brought me back to those feelings. So I was mortified for my daughter, but I was also reacting to the things that I went through. And so that's exactly what I'm talking about. Be very aware, especially when it has to do with your own children, because your own children are going to be like a you. And you're watching them like a video. It's like watching yourself through their eyes and through their experiences. And so some of the trauma that you've been through is definitely going to be manifested when you're watching them go through experiences. And you're going to project some of those feelings there, because it's very hard not to. But triggers can happen in all types of ways. And so one of the triggers is not being listened to. This is a typical trigger when people are in situations where they feel like they're not being heard, they're not being listened to. Maybe they're at a meeting at work and they give a suggestion and their comment is just completely steamrolled over. Maybe not, you know, deliberately, but just because someone else interrupts and talks, or maybe because, you know, we lack the security to kind of know how to project our ideas in a confident way. So we speak softer, or we don't really, you know, produce that type of a bold comment. And so it doesn't get well received. And so not being listened to is a big trigger, or being in a relationship where you feel as though that intimate partner is just not understanding what it is that you're trying to relate to them. Like, you're trying to assert yourself, you're trying to make it known what you want, what you feel, what your desires are, what you, you know, despise, or whatever the case may be. And you feel as though that partner is not listening to you, or that parent is not listening to you. Also a lack of privacy. Those introverts out there, and I'm one of them, one of the things that we know for sure as an introvert is that we really refresh while being alone. When we're feeling overwhelmed, when there's a lot of stress, when we have a long day, when we have to meet with a lot of different people, we really long for that privacy. And sometimes it might only be just kind of going into the bathroom stall for 2 minutes just to be able to regroup and to have that time alone. But a lot of people don't have the ability to even have a bathroom in the house that isn't shared by many other people, or a bedroom that they can go into, you know, a man cave or something like that. Many people don't have those things. Or we work in situations where there's no offices and everybody's in the open space, where we feel very exposed, or where we're just in a situation where we have a lot of, you know, public kind of stimulation that's going on. And that can definitely cause somebody to be triggered, even in an intimate partner relationship, when we're married, when we're in a committed relationship. as much as you love that person, you need to be able to have your time where you can just regroup, where you can just have that me time. Even extroverts need it, but not as much as introverts do. And so not having privacy is very difficult. Imagine people that are incarcerated and that becomes their lives, that they're literally never alone, not in their cell, not going to the bathroom, taking a shower. There's literally no opportunity at all, unless you're in segregation, to be alone. And think about how triggering that could be. Feeling humiliated, you know, many, many times shame. And I want to take you back to the podcast on My Knees Are Bleeding, you know, all about shame. And when we feel humiliated, when we feel as though there's something wrong with us, remember, that's the difference between guilt and shame. Shame says there's something wrong with you. And so when we're in a situation where we feel humiliated, what we're really feeling is that there's something wrong with me. And what do we want to do? We want to hide. You know, we want to pull away from the crowd. We don't know what to do with ourselves. We just want to disappear. And so that can be extremely triggering. So it's the difference between something that could happen privately, you know, like, for instance, if we knew that, you know, our car payments were behind and we got a, you know, private call that says, hey, you know what, you're in default and, you know, your car payments are behind. That's one thing that brings enough stress. But if your car gets repossessed and everyone in the neighborhood sees that, that's going to bring humiliation. Number one, you have financial difficulties. Number two, now you don't have transportation. But the third one is now you feel humiliated. And my guess is that's going to be the thing that's probably going to be the most triggering out of all of the three. Feeling lonely. You know, everybody needs to have community. We've had a lot of podcasts about community. We've talked about healthy communities and why we end up in unhealthy ones, because our need to be in communities is so strong. But we all need people. When God created Adam, Adam had so many animals around him, and he had the God of the universe at his beck and call, and God observed him, and he looked and saw and assessed and evaluated it, and after all was said and done, he said, it is not good for a man to be alone. And that's why he created Eve. And that's not just true for romantic relationships. It's true in general. When people are alone for a long period of time and they don't have connectivity, it can be very triggering when we're sitting with ourselves and our thoughts and we don't have that input from others. We don't have that affection. We don't have that affirmation, or just being able to sit side by side with somebody in silence can really cure loneliness. And so it's something that really can cause a lot of issues. And I know a lot of times people avoid being around people because there's some other triggering things. But I will tell you that avoidance entirely is definitely going to be a trigger in and of itself. Darkness can be triggering many, many times when we have darkness. Even as adults, I know a lot of adults that have come and spoken to me about being in the dark at night. Their thoughts begin to kind of race. You know, there's fears that come in, or it brings them back to a time where they didn't have control over turning on lights or turning off lights, maybe because they were in prison or they were in, you know, an abusive home, or maybe they grew up without electricity. The electricity was turned off a lot, or they grew up in a place where there wasn't a lot of the electricity. But darkness definitely is something. Even think about it in terms of daylight savings time. So many more people are depressed and have feelings of sadness during the times when it becomes dark earlier. If it's getting dark at 4:30 in the afternoon, it starts to impact people tremendously in the negative. And you'll begin to see, as the spring, you know, kind of comes out and we begin to, you know, hear the birds and experience the weather, but most of all, when it starts to get light out later, the world just wakes up. It awakens. So darkness is definitely a trigger. Being teased and picked on is a lot like being humiliated, right? Anything like that where you're embarrassed publicly. Feeling pressured is a huge trigger when we're in a situation where we feel, you know, like the Bible says, hard-pressed on every side, where there's so many things going on at once. You know, you have deadlines at work. You know, your husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever is pressuring you because you're not spending enough time with them, or because you're, you know, needing to contribute more to the finances, or, you know, you need to fix something in the house, or you're not spending enough time, you know, just having recreational time with them. And then maybe the children have needs. Maybe there's problems at school that require attention. They're not producing the way that they should. All of these things cause pressure. And those of you that are dealing with a lot of it, I want to commend you and let you know that, you know, you are tremendously resilient. And you know who you are, where it seems like every area of your life has tremendous pressure. And I know that we can get through it. I know that it's something that we can overcome, but in the meantime, it is extremely triggering. And sometimes we just feel like blowing, you know, we just feel like we just cannot take any more. People yelling can definitely, noises, loud noises. Remember I told you the five senses are super important to pay attention to, right? So the things that we hear are real important, whether it's something positive or it's something negative. And when we're stressed, extra noise is really going to take us over the top. It could be anything from just, you know, a broken clock that's kind of ticking in a weird, strange beat. You know, it could be the furnace that seems to be malfunctioning because of these noises that are there. Definitely, you know, arguing. Your parents are arguing, or the neighbors are, or, you know, there's just a lot of discord that's going on within the family. Just having voices be raised and noises, you know, just be all around you is extremely triggering, because what you really are trying to do is quiet all of the stress, but it's just coming out in so many different ways. So arguments as part of the yelling, you know, being isolated is similar to, you know, being lonely. And being touched, this is an interesting one as well. Many people have had some trauma in their past where there have been people with not just abuse for sure, but even people that have just crossed a lot of boundaries. And as adults, we're super sensitive to that. Somebody coming into our personal space, you know, we all have this imaginary sort of like, you know, circumference of a line around us that separates us from everybody else. And it's unspoken, but when people come into that personal space, it's something that, you know, really raises some red flags for us. And there are times when people are just very touchy, you know, and they're not necessarily, you know, presenting any type of inappropriate behavior, but, you know, they might just put their hand on your shoulder, or they might just, you know, they come up behind you. And that's one thing that's very triggering when people have had trauma, having anybody come behind them, right? There are some people that have like sensory issues, and any type of touch, even wearing certain clothing, can be difficult for them. And so it's important to know for yourself if that is something that is problematic for you. For instance, you know, where there's, you know, touching of any kind or whatever, boundary crossing, is maybe to put some things in place to help you to kind of prevent being in a situation where you're vulnerable to, you know, people being able to be in that situation. I mean, for instance, when you're at the airport, you know, and you're in line at the airport, or, you know, at a train station or whatever, where you're in a line and you're out in the public, that's a time where a lot of people will try to cut in front of you, or they'll come behind you, or they're going to be around you and they're going to stand and they're going to linger, or when you are in a store. So if being touched in that way is difficult for you, you might want to plan differently, and you might want to choose to go to, you know, Walmart or the grocery store early in the morning on a Wednesday morning or something when most people are not shopping, or to, you know, travel in the less crowded times, to try to do some planning, some preventative things, and also to kind of be aware of the people that do cross those boundaries, because if you're hyper aware of that, then it will help you to avoid it. Experiencing unfair treatment. This is a huge trigger that I've seen with a lot of people, is the understanding, or at least the thought that there is favoritism. And I spoke about this in another podcast, feeling as though this one is getting better treatment than I am. And when we feel that way, that definitely brings back memories. It brings back memories of maybe when we were a kid and our big brother got, you know, more money for camp, more attention, more of mom's time, more money for his uniforms, or whatever the case may be. where we felt as though there was favoritism in the home, favoritism at school, favoritism in the sports that you played or the dance, you know, troupe that you were a part of. And that kind of follows through. You start to see those same patterns, even though it might not be true. You're sensitive to the fact that you might still be getting unfair treatment. And some people are getting unfair treatment. And so there is a reality where people do get treated that way. And it is very true. It's not just a distortion. And it's how to really be able to deal with that appropriately so that you're not then having other type of treatment happen because of your reactions, if that makes sense. Not having control. Now with stress is the type of thing where the way to manage stress the best is to have some level of control. And we can't control everything, can we? We can't control who's going to cut us off, you know, on the road. We can't control the stupid things that people might say to us. We can't control, you know, whether or not Aunt Bertha is going to show up on Thanksgiving drunk. We can't control those things, but we can control our specific reactions. We can control our choices about where we go, how long we stay, who we're going to invite over to our homes, who we're going to interact with. You know, there are a lot of choices that we can make that will give us control, because when we feel like we have no choice at all in the world, that it's all being just put on us, that's definitely a trigger. Receiving mixed messages. When I used to do work up at the a few of the prisons, one of the responses that the clients would say that was always a trigger was when people would flip on them, meaning that, you know, they would have one set of rules when, you know, one person was on shift. You know, okay, these are the rules. And then when someone else left and then they're there again, now all of a sudden it's a different set of rules. Not knowing really where you stand, not being able to have the security of knowing this is permissible, this isn't, I'm okay if I'm acting this way. If that changes and we get mixed messages, then that can be a real trigger, because then we really just don't know. We thought we had it under like some sort of control, but we don't. Being stared at. I know a lot of people have had that where there's someone across the room staring at us. Again, old stuff, right? When people go through our stuff, you know, I know for me, I have a nice little glove compartment that's like in the middle of my car, you know, in the middle of the two seats. And I have it set up just the way that I want it, with napkins in there and, you know, my charger and everything. And if someone goes in there looking for something and they start making a mess of that glove compartment, it really bothers me. And believe me, you'd think that there was like $1 million in that glove compartment by the way that I react, but it's just, I don't want anybody going through it and messing it up, you know? So that can be a trigger, like someone going through your desk drawers or, you know, going into your closet, and they may not be going in there to do anything wrong at all. They're just trying to find something, but that can be a trigger. Contact with family members, definitely. And, you know, there are definitely the family members that we have that we love to be around, who are refreshing, and we enjoy our time with them, and we want to be with them as much as possible. But not everybody that we're blood related to is somebody that we are refreshed by. And sometimes there's a lot of things that can happen. We can be triggered by, you know, they talk to us the same way that they did when we were 9, or they're drinking too much, or, you know, they just say a whole bunch of stupid stuff out of their mouths when they don't, you know, necessarily mean to, but they do. Or they tell the same story about you that you're the most embarrassed about every single Thanksgiving, every single Christmas. You're going to hear that same story. Or they comment on, you know, aren't you married yet? You know, what's going on? You're 30 something years old. You're not married, or whatever. They're constantly bringing things out or doing things that are triggering. And so we need to be aware of that. The most important element of this is the fact that why would we continue to put ourselves in situations where we're going to be triggered over and over and over again if we have control? So my suggestion to you is, first of all of what I just said, identify out of those what triggers you, in particular, and also add to the list, because there might be some things that I didn't even mention that came to mind during this time, and then try to identify how you can minimize those triggers. How can you minimize them? And then once you figure that out, how can you prepare yourself so that you're not going to be set over the edge? And just so you know, here's some warning signs that, and by the way, this is from Stephanie Covington's Beyond Violence. I'm borrowing some concepts from that, and I've added some of my own stuff to it. But there's some warning signs that will let you know that you've been triggered. For instance, some restlessness, some agitation, pacing. I know for myself, I've watched myself pace like a border collie sometimes. And when I'm watching myself do it, I'm realizing, wow, I'm literally being triggered and didn't even realize it. So sometimes our reactions in our body or our behavior lets us know that we've been triggered before we're even aware that we were triggered. Shortness of breath, hard breathing, sensations of tightness in the chest. Doesn't that sound like a heart attack a little bit? Just so you know, many, many times people end up in the ER. They think they're having a heart attack. Obviously, the medical professionals will do all the tests that they need to do, but at the end of the day, most times they end up sending them for a stress test because they realize that they're having a panic attack because they've been triggered, and maybe they, you know, they really do have a diagnosis of anxiety or PTSD. Heart pounding, sweating, a tight knot in the stomach, a lot of GI issues. A lot of GI doctors will go through every test imaginable, colonoscopy, endoscopy, whatever it is, the whole gamut of tests, and will come to the conclusion that a lot of the GI issues are related to the anxiety that that person is dealing with. Teeth clenching, shaking, smoking, crying, giggling. Some people laugh when they have been triggered, and when there's a lot of anxiety, they begin to have like almost inappropriate laughter. Some people sing inappropriately. Some bouncing legs, swearing, eating more. A lot of times eating is related to it. Whether people eat more or less, they can be impacted by it. And also rocking, you know, the rocking and moving your legs and things like that can be a sign. And so I want to challenge all of you to come to a point where you take a look at those things. And just to kind of give you an idea, in the Bible, just to kind of show you one person when I think about being triggered was Moses. You know, Moses was this orphan. I mean, basically, you know, his mom had to put him in a basket and send him down the river because all of the little babies, the Israeli babies, were being killed. And so Pharaoh's daughter found him and adopted him. And so he was adopted and lived in this palace, and he had this great life, right? Think about it. He was a baby adopted by, you know, Pharaoh's daughter, but he was nursed by his own mother because they needed a wet nurse, and they got his own mother to do it. So that baby wasn't intellectually at a place to be able to know, but he must have known that he was more bonded with this person that was nursing him than the one that was putting him to bed at night. And as time went on, he lived this unbelievable life, right? But then when he was 40 years old, he saw an Egyptian soldier basically mistreating, you know, another Israelite. And he snapped and he killed him, you know, he killed him. And then later on in the Bible, he got so angry that God would not let him inherit and go into the promised land because of the way his anger took over towards the people. He also had a speech impediment, and there were times when, you know, he had set himself up against God's best wishes to have his brother take over because he was so insecure about his speech impediment. He didn't want to speak in front of the people and in front of the king. And it cost him because of that. So you can have a beautiful life in a palace, right? You can have so many wonderful things, but your insecurities, your trauma, the things that you've been through can trigger you to have reactions, even being somebody that will forever go down as being, you know, the person that God used to deliver people from captivity. And so I just want you to be aware of your triggers. What are they? How can I minimize them? How can I be more self-aware? How can I increase my insight in all of this and allow myself to be somebody who is less reactive? Thank you so much.
In collaboration with IML Productions, this has been your host, Ginger Wilk, with That Which Matters. Thank you for listening.